listening to The Third Degree, 2SER's Environment and Social Justice Half Hour. I'm Jess Minchell, and this is our International Women's Day special. Broadcast's Goodbye Girls is our regular theme music, but it's a bit of a nostalgic show today. Today is actually the first time The Third Degree has fallen on International Women's Day, and there was something funny that happened to me earlier in the week. After years of working alongside Libby King, Tessa Dowdle and Hannah Walters, I caught myself looking around 2SER's newsroom and studios with the stark realisation that these amazing women had moved on. And not only did I miss producing radio with them, but I missed their voices on The Third Degree. So this morning, The Third Degree is a little self-indulgent. I chased down friends and asked them about why they've moved on and what they thought about The Third Degree and how we work together on our radio show. But it was also hard work. I scaled the hills of West Ryde yesterday carrying Hannah's steel-capped boots she'd left at my house to meet Tessa and Hannah on their lunch break at TAFE. And later on in the show you'll hear how tricky it was to find Libby in a patch of phone reception in Alice Springs. Right now, I'm eating lunch, well, yesterday, but I'm eating lunch with Tessa and Hannah at West Ryde TAFE.
We're at West Ryde TAFE doing Certificate 3 in Arboriculture.
And what's Arboriculture?
It's like tree science. It's learning to be a tree doctor. So it's taking all, well, my take is that it takes all the practical side of environmental stuff, and we're learning it. Like, last week we learned how to sharpen the blades on a chainsaw. And we just spent a couple of hours doing botanical names, and we learned about the soils, and it's a very male-dominated industry with only two women in the whole class. And we sort of have to stand our ground quite a bit. But
I also have two cute stories from last week, one of which is that I bought some steel cap boots, and the shop clerk was very lovely and ran off and said, "Oh, I'll just get you something." And he came back with some pink-coloured socks to give me for free after he'd asked me what I was doing. So I thought it was very lovely. And he was like, "I hope watermelon's okay." But it was a bit like, oh, cool.
Of all the other colours that were on.
Yeah, like 20. And also when we were doing chainsaw maintenance, we were looking at the spark plug. And the teacher was like, "Oh, you know, usually there's a little measure thing." And then he looked at us and he's like, "But you could use an emery board or something to check if the spark plug's the correct distance from the..."
And did you have to ask what an emery board is?
Yeah, pretty much.
I actually don't really know.
The nail file.
Oh. Yeah. I was like, "Yeah, I'm using my, you know, 3 22-inch file here." And he's like, "Here's an emery board." Yeah, and there's a few challenges about... Makes me think. I've been trying to think a bit in the last couple of weeks about women's role in environmentalism and especially the practical on-the-ground stuff. Like, it's often the men who have the big equipment and who work in the trades that affect our everyday environments, but I don't know. I think there's room for women to get in there, like us.
And what about more broadly? Are there many women arborists in Sydney?
I don't know any, but apparently there's a few. And there's a organisation called Women in the Trees or something. It has another name. But people keep telling us about it, but it's kind of hard to find any details regarding it. But the person that I think started up Arboriculture at this TAFE was a woman. They talk about her all the time, Judy Fakes, and she seems pretty awesome. But apart from that, I don't really know much. Yeah. Apparently a few women come through the course every now and then.
So if you're a woman arborist out there, get in contact with us.
We'll
be allies.
So a women arboring team.
Yes, please.
But wait, how did we get here from radio is what I want to know. Because a few years ago we were all doing a radio show together. And I'm not quite sure what happened. Different diverging of interest. I mean, which is not quite true. I know you both are still interested in radio. But I was wondering if maybe we could have a little bit of a chat about our show and other things that you've been doing since then, and then sort of how we've ended up here all sitting at a green picnic table outside a little kiosk at West Ryde TAFE.
My goodness.
Could be funny. Maybe we did get here through radio in some roundabout way. Because I know that you went down to the South Coast Forest to do research and do stories.
Right. That's true.
And then I learned how to climb on the south coast after you'd been there, and then fell in love with it.
So basically I just got my timing wrong, because I'd already been to the forest.
Yeah, you went first. You did it the wrong way. I don't know. What was it? So we're talking about how we got here.
Well, what
have we been doing?
I mean, maybe uni isn't an interesting way to start this, but maybe just briefly, you did start doing...
Yeah, I started in the fine field of civil engineering, which is... I found incredibly boring. But I dropped out halfway or more than halfway through. I was doing arts as well. Pretty much because I got diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. So I didn't think that was the best way to spend my active youthful years, you know, stuck behind a desk somewhere. So then that gave me more time, and then I really wanted to do more creative stuff, and then I knew you from other environmental things, I think.
Yeah, maybe just more hanging around.
Yeah.
Student enviro things.
Yeah. And you were doing this exciting radio project, and I thought, yes, please. I want to have a go at that.
But so I went away. But you were working on the show.
I can't remember.
Neither can I. How did we start?
How did you start the third degree?
We started on Skid Row with Libby, who I'll be chatting to a bit later. Libby! And were you involved at that point, or was
no,
a bit later?
No, I think I heard about it, like, as the show was getting a bit more cred and getting more public. And once you'd moved to 2SER, I heard about it and went...
I don't know, it seemed like... We were working together before I went overseas.
We'd done some stuff.
Yeah, and together. Then while I was away in Mexico, you both were really solid on the show. Because that's when you started
solid
getting...
Solid like a rock.
I have no idea. I think I started in late 2008.
So just for everybody else who's listening to this, we have been doing this show for 4 years. and we do see each other a lot, so I'm not super sad. I mean, I'm really sad that I'm not making radio with you at the moment.
We'll make comebacks.
No, exactly, which is what...
Faces for radio, that's why we're here.
But yeah, just another sidetrack. You studied biology?
I did. My uni academic path was biology and environmental science, which I got pretty disheartened with pretty quickly at Sydney Uni. But met some awesome people through all the extracurricular stuff, like Enviro Collective and the broader student networks, with like connecting with other unis. No, I think I saw there was a niche of environmental education, like actually communicating what you're learning about instead of just sitting in this stuffy classroom. I don't know, and all of a sudden this amazing environmental justice show popped up, and I was like, that's perfect. And so I went from having absolutely no media skills to like suddenly, I don't know, you were so encouraging.
Yeah.
So was Libby. I just remember being like, just come in. What are you interested in? Oh yeah, just phone them up. Just do an interview. Like, really easy to get your thoughts and your interests across in this medium.
And how do you think we were working together on radio, or how do you think that changed?
I just remember that while you were talking, Hannah, that when the show started, I got involved because I was interviewed 2 or 3 times. I was you guys are amazing.
What were you talking to you about?
About climate change related stuff climate camps. And at that time, which is really hard to believe now, but no one was talking about any climate related things in the media at all, which is partly why the show started. And then people did start talking about it, and it seemed quite problematic because it was really focused on large industries and started becoming co-opted by government and greenwashing and stuff. And then, so then the focus moved to more social justice, environmental justice bent.
As other people started covering more climate justice.
Yeah, and then it was like, okay, well, you know, climate change itself is in the media, but then it seemed like it wasn't... The reporting on it was quite dry and scientific and disappointing, and there were lots of human aspects that were being overlooked and critiques of what people were reporting on as well. were being missed. So I think that the show just became a module kind of thing for everything that wasn't being told.
And what were some of the favourites, your favourite stories, Tessa?
Definitely when just when we went through, we drove up to Alice Springs to cover the Defending Indigenous Rights conference. That was, yeah, that was totally a highlight.
I remember we had little media passes that we wrote our names on and the third degree on in Texter, to SER.
We were famous, at last. And then we won an award, which was nice but also hilarious. But I remember this morning that when we drove up there, we actually inadvertently, even though it was our greatest fear, camped at Maralinga in the fallout zone. And when we came back, we were telling people and we were so terrified. We did an interview while we were up there telling someone that we'd accidentally camped in the fallout zone, and they said, well, there's lots of scientific evidence that that area isn't radioactive anymore. And we're kind of like, that's weird. But then a year later, a report came out saying that that was all lies and that the zone was still very radioactive. But we, the whole way up, we didn't get any, there was no signs, there was nothing indicating that we were possibly camping in a fallout zone.
We misread the map, and it was just more the next day as we started driving, as we realised we were a lot closer to a town that we thought should have been further away, and all the vegetation started growing again, because it was the place that we stayed overnight. Whoa. Was just this desolate,
eerie, dead,
nothing was
growing. So dry.
And that's not desert land.
No. Whoops.
So great to link a really positive part of the show to quite a scary
I could segue
one.
There.
Yeah.
I could segue into, like, this show. I feel like we've always wanted to go to places and be in the hub of things. Like, go to the place, like, be face-to-face, go to all the rallies, go to the conferences, be on the country with the people who are being affected by all the environmental disasters and greenwashing and bulldozing, and I can't say that word on radio, but yeah, we always went to the places and made real relationships. I don't know, that stood out with our approach.
Do you think the radio came out of sort of trips and relationships, say, with traditional owners that you were building, Hannah, separate to radio, or that that was sort of pursued a little bit more because of radio?
I think radio gave me an extra tool to, like, build a stronger relationship. When someone, when you're having a conversation with someone and you're like, well, I care about your story, but I'm also going to do whatever I can through the privilege that I have to share your story with other people, to help spread the word, to help your campaign, to help build awareness. Like, when someone realizes that you're willing to do that, and then when they hear the story or they see it on your website and they're like, actually, that's, after, you know, years, decades, hundreds of years even with traditional owners of, like, no one else listening to them or feeling like their story is just tucked away in a back corner in this tiny little place of silence, radio just blasts all of that. So I reckon it helped to make a lot of the relationships stronger and made them bigger.
And do you think we just stopped doing enough trips, or were there, I mean, was there actually a particular reason why you started pursuing other things rather than, I mean, I would like hate to sort of chuck a word in here, but I think I might have to, and that's burnout.
Totally. I think that's what got me in the end, is that it's every week. It's producing a half-hour show every week. And we'll, because at the time, I don't know what it's like now, possibly the same, but we were writing, researching, getting content and producing and presenting every week, half an hour,
job.
And often just two of us.
Or sometimes even one.
Yeah,
with, you know, you'd get one person in to come and do a story. Mm. Or you'd run it by someone on the night before. But I think a way forward from that would be to have a more collective approach, to have more time to get the material together. Because, like, stories just can't be whipped together in a night, especially when we're trying to come from such a deep understanding and like tell the more of the story than just a snippet. Like you're not just getting the stuff on the top, not just the headlines.
Can I ask another question? I'm not sure how interesting this is for other people, but I guess for me, he's still
right
trying
now
to do this.
It's feedback. It's
the show. Do you think that burnout is something that's specifically related to your gender or our gender, as opposed to how we were structuring it? I mean, we were working in a collective. This wasn't a top-down APAY like producer working with contributors. We were all producers. We were all reporters and presenters.
I don't know. I think I would say so if I was in a different context, but I think that the men that we were working with are really excellent.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah. There's plenty of other circumstances where I've done organising and ended up doing most of the work because I'm a woman and I think valued the work differently, or I could see the gaps and see all the hard work, but the other people on the show are really excellent.
Yeah, I can
and they, yeah. They don't leave us in the lurch ever.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've got my pondering face on. Sometimes I do feel in any work that I do that my gender makes a sort of like I have to keep proving myself. So every week I'd have to do a really good story instead of just like something that could pass. It was like I was going to be scrutinized more. I'm not sure exactly by who, but... And we didn't. You know, it was just... We were sort of performing for ourselves and we were a group of friends. I did trust you all completely.
And you were just listening to former third degree producers and presenters, Tessa Dowdle and Hannah Walters and myself having lunch. So this is the Third Degree's International Women's Day special. I'm Jess Minchell and I'm currently the only woman working on the show, but that never used to be the case. So this morning is about me tracking down the other women I used to be working with and asking for them to have their voices back on air this show today in a celebration. So I'm just about to give Libby King a call.
Hello.
Hi, Libby.
Hi, Jess. How are you going?
I'm good.
I'm in a very noisy cafe, but I'll run out. Hang on. I'll just finish this last bite.
Oh, no, stay with your lunch. That's fine.
I've only got one bite left. It was sort of perfect timing.
I've already started recording. I should probably tell you that.
Oh, my God, Jess.
I hope that's okay. I did want to just, like, maybe explain to people that it was a bit hard to get a hold of you. So this is quite a time-pressed chat because you are on your lunch break and there are a few reception issues where you're living at the moment, just outside of Alice Springs. Have you found have you had a completely different like idea about communication living in Alice for a bit over a year now?
Yeah, I guess I have. I mean, I'd never lived outside of Sydney before, and just in so many ways that's been really present in my mind the past year, and I think almost more now that it's been a year and I'm kind of feeling like it's going to be a bit longer, than like a while that I'm going to be here. I'm sort of feeling quite settled. And so, I mean, I guess thinking about communication in terms of staying in touch more so than just the everyday kind of communication, it's kind of nice, like, to have, to just sort of know that when I'm at home, I'm really at home, and like I do get patches of reception around the property, but yeah, you're just kind of living out in the quietness of the space where I'm living.
I have had to catch you at lunch today because you're doing a course.
Yeah, so today I'm doing a suicide first aid course, which I'm doing through my work at the women's shelter. So the course is particularly, I guess, around because in my line of work and the line of work of other people doing the course, you are often coming up at meeting people that have gone through a lot of trauma and for whatever reason may be likely to be suicidal. But it's just really applicable to lots of parts of life And the whole point of the course, I guess, with this first aid approach is that you don't have to be trained to be the first point of contact that someone makes who's feeling suicidal. And so it's about having a sort of a bit of a process to go through because, you know, you might not be a counsellor or a doctor or someone who feels like they're professionally equipped to cope with someone going through that kind of thing. But there are sort of things that you can do to help them out and keep them safe, I guess, is the focus. And if they need other help, you know, to point them in that direction, but to keep them safe in that moment. Well, yeah, which is just like, I guess, just been really helpful to think about it as something that can be that kind of simple, in the way that first aid can feel kind of simple, like you're very aware that you're not necessarily equipped to really medically change a lot in someone, but you are equipped to keep them safe in that moment. I've been finding it really good to talk about really directly about these things that can feel so amorphous and difficult to put into words, and just to realise that, yeah, you can be really direct about these things sometimes, and that can actually be really helpful for someone who's maybe not even quite sure how they're feeling.
So I know this is quite a strange question, but it is something that I asked Tessa and Hannah just now.
Mm.
And that is, how did you get to living in Alice Springs, or just outside of it, and working in a women's refuge? When it seems like just a little while ago you and I were producing radio together.
I know.
And I'm still here.
Alice Springs is interesting to think about being here now, because in that last year that I was in Sydney, I think many of us from the third degree ended up in Alice Springs. There was a lot going on here, and I think we reported back about quite a bit of it around the convergence of people gathering to talk about the intervention and the effects that it was having on people's lives, and then which you guys went to, and then I went up for a bit of a radioactive tour to talk about the proposed waste dump at Muckatee. And yeah, I guess in the course of being there, I really was quite struck by Alice Springs and ended up staying here for a while, and then sort of feeling that, yeah, maybe this was a time and a place for moving on from Sydney and being up here to, I guess, partly to be around for some anti-waste dump campaigning, and also just because, yeah, it's quite an amazing place, very different from Sydney, and yeah, somewhere I felt quite drawn to at that time.
It's interesting that you're mentioning that convergence, because that's something that Tessa just said that was really one of the highlights for her about working on the third degree, was that trip that we did. But Alice Springs was really something that I had, like, I felt an affinity to as well. Mm. And it was just like, I guess maybe it's the pace. I mean, I've never really met or been in a place where I've met so many people who are just coming back from a four-day swag camping trip under the stars, or just about to go on one. And I was wondering how you found that kind of, I mean, have you been doing some writing or some?
Yeah, definitely that pace thing, and certainly the swag thing as well. I've never used the swag so much as I have this past year that I've been here, and it is really common for, you'll just be sort of, you know, having breakfast and someone will be like, oh, let's just go camping, and you throw your swags in the back and off you go. And yeah, it's not that we're that much closer to places that you can camp than I was in Sydney, but just that it's at the forefront of everyone's mind, maybe because there's less other stuff going on and you're just surrounded by quite beautiful ranges. And where I'm living, all of this is just feels particularly the case, because I'm 20 k's out of town on a property that's going out towards the Western McDonald Ranges. And there's just lots of beautiful places around there. And right where I'm living, we're right in amongst some ranges, and it's just a totally different kind of pace of life. So even from in town here, you're just, it's a very quiet space and you're surrounded by these hills, and it's very easy just to spend most of the day going for little walks or lying in the hammock or reading. Yeah, it's certainly like, I don't know, it's hard to, I mean, part of it as well is that I'm newer in town, so I'm not as connected up with everything that's going on, but I just feel a lot calmer and a lot less caught up with all these different things going on, and a lot just more able to be in that space and have a bit more ownership, I guess, over what I'm doing with my time.
You did study media at Sydney Uni, and we worked on a radio show together, and I know that you own a radio recorder, but we're a bit confused this morning when we're trying to work out the best way to do this, whether you actually knew where all the pieces were that you'd need to be able to connect it up to your laptop to be able to send me through some bits.
Yeah.
Can I ask, have you been doing any recordings, or is that media part still a part of some of your days?
It's not a huge part, I will admit, but it's certainly in the back of my mind. I mean, there is a community radio station here, and a friend of mine works at it, and we've been talking about it, and I've been saying, oh, yes, I would like to get back into that. Maybe one day. So that's certainly something that I might do. And I'm living with a lot of different people, and we have done a bit of recording, but nothing that I would sort of, and that I'm at the point where I would edit it up and put it on air. But yeah, definitely a lot of recording of people talking about their lives here and the things that they've gone through here. And a lot of singing. I live with a lot of very amazing singers and some people that do traditional healing in the area, and that have, yeah, I guess been involved in lots of programs in Alice Springs about going back to country and, yeah, growing bush foods and connecting with the land. Yeah.
Can I ask if you can remember, or whether you can notice, I mean, if you think back to how we were working on the show together and how we were thinking about more mainstream environmental media coverage as opposed to what we were trying to do. And then I was wondering if from that, I mean, if you can remember how you were feeling about those issues when we were doing the show, and whether your ideas about environmental media or even radio in general have changed since that point.
Well, that's a big question.
It is. Sorry, that's a no, huge that's one to try true. And finish on.
I mean, I guess coming here, I've been doing a lot of different things to what I was doing in Sydney, and spending a lot of time with a lot of people that I didn't see as much of in Sydney. And so, I mean, I've certainly for a long time while I'm working on the show and otherwise been frustrated with media in general about environmental things and other things. I'm feeling that issues tend to get spoken about very simplistically and polarised, and I think possibly often the wrong things focused on. And that's something that I guess I've become even further incensed about. I mean, Alice Springs is a place that's been in the media a lot, and that I think is represented in the media in really simplistic ways. And I'll have people who live in other places, you know, calling me and saying, you know, that they're worried, that they've heard that this is a, you know, a very violent place to live, and other, I guess, you know, crap like that, that I think comes from a very simplified representation of life here in the media.
And what about radio, the radio form? Are there things that you're excited about that are separate
yes,
to?
There are. Actually, this is something I meant to mention before, something that I've been really excited about, a project that's been in the back of my mind and another friend that lives here's mind, is a little, I guess, a little reflection project on an area of Alice Springs that has changed a lot over time. In town, there's a road, Gap Road, which is like quite a main road that you go along to go out different places out of town. And it used to be a little area in there called the Gap Cottages, where, yeah, different people lived and was a bit of a big community area for a lot of the people here, and was actually the place where my friend's mother lived. And we've been thinking of doing a little heritage project on that area because a lot of that history, I guess, is being lost.
That's former third degree producer Libby King on today's International Women's Day special. I've been tracking down the women I miss working with on this show and whose voices I'm used to hearing in this time slot. Before Libby, I caught up with Hannah Walters and Tessa Dowdle at their Arboring course. I'm Jess Minchell, and stay tuned for Steph on the Daily and the rest of our IWD special programming on 2SER.